From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, that is, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Thursday, April 11th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
You're yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. Just ask anybody, they'll tell you. Let's get things started officially with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. It's a good one here, too. It says, praying is hard. Living without it is harder. Yeah. Hey, here's just a good rule of thumb. Pray as though your life depends on it.
Ooh, I like that.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted History.
That's it, right.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history. Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same, you need to know your Twisted History.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
There you go. Yeah, nice daily threat. It's always a good motivator, right? Well, kids, it was on this day in 1907, New York Giants future baseball Hall of Fame backstop Roger Bresnahan became the first catcher to wear shin guards. Because without them, his legs hurt. And it was on this day in 1912, the Titanic left Queenstown, Ireland for New York. And as we all know, it didn't make it.
This will not look good on a resume!
I think it'd be fair to say that Joe Biden has been a huge disappointment in virtually everything that he's done since he took office. Huge disappointment. The economy sucks. Manufacturing has been dying, withering away again. Education, not doing so well. Crime has been exploding coast to coast. Even in red states, we're having a problem with crime because of the influx from the open border. And, I mean, do I have to run the laundry list of things that have gotten worse since Joe Biden's been president? But now, his job as commander-in-chief has been in question because there's more than a little evidence that he has been severely neglecting our military. There's a shocking new report that's exposed how Biden is giving Marines unlivable conditions. Now, over the past few years, Biden and his Democrat allies in his administration have been trying to drum up support for sending billions more in taxpayer dollars to regions like Eastern Europe, Ukraine, and now the Middle East, with the hot conflict between Israel and Hamas. Over $100 billion has been sent to Ukraine, all at our expense, yours and mine, our tax money. Despite the economic issues that Americans are facing, and they are many here in the homeland. No doubt this hasn't helped Biden's approval ratings, which continue to suffer, thank goodness, because only with those lousy approval ratings do we have any hope that Donald Trump is going to win in November. I'm praying that what happens in November is so many people go out to vote for Donald Trump that any fraud in the election process in November brought by the left will be overrun by the sheer turnout of people voting for Donald Trump. But while the U.S. is funneling money to the Ukrainian military left and right, the U.S. military itself is actually suffering. There's a new report that's raised everyone's eyebrows about how much the Biden administration's neglecting U.S. soldiers, so much so that their living conditions are being described as uninhabitable. Sounds pretty bad to me. The recent service-wide inspection within the Marine Corps, concluding on March 15th, shed a lot of light on the challenging living conditions experienced by many Marines. And despite this revelation, rectifying these long-standing issues poses a formidable challenge, as shared by Marines themselves who spoke with the Daily Caller News Foundation. In February, Marine Corps Acting Commandant General Christopher Mahoney mandated thorough inspections of all housing facilities for single Marines, termed wall-to-wall inspections. and they were to be conducted by March 15th. Well, preliminary findings from this investigation, covering 60,000 rooms across 25 installations globally, unveiled some pretty distressing conditions. Yeah, Marines residing in unclean, congested quarters, often grappling with dysfunctional amenities and privacy deficits. And this reality echoes the concerns raised in a watchdog report from September, confirmed by Marine Corps officials speaking to the Daily Caller. Here's a message that was sent out by Lieutenant General Eric M. Smith. And this was sent out via X to Marines.
Marines and sailors of Marine Corps Forces Japan and 3MEF. You've probably heard a lot about an initiative to come out and do a survey of all of our housing, our family housing, either on-base residences or off-base residences. Here's the deal. Between now and 15 April, we would like to come out to your home and ask you about 18 questions. How are you living? What challenges do you have with your landlord? Is your plumbing working? We're not coming to inspect you. We're not looking for dust and dirt, and we're not looking to see if you emptied your trash can. We just want to come see how you're living. We're going to ask the service member if we may come and conduct that home visit. That team will be an officer and a staff NCO. You can say no, and no one will hold it against you. If you say no to the visit, we'll ask you if we can conduct a phone interview with you while you are at your home. You can also say no to that, and there's no problem with that either. I hope that you'll allow us to do the visit, or at least the phone call, because we really want to know what challenges you have so we as an institution can help you. Again, we're not there to inspect you. We're there to help. Remember this, that if you allow us to come and do the home visit, we can make some differences here. The Marine or the sailor who authorizes the home visit, you'll be home. We will make sure that you have the day off, and we won't treat you like the cable guy that we show up between 8 and 1700. We'll be there at a specific time to the best of our ability, but you'll be home that day. If you are deployed, then that won't be possible, but it's still your call whether you allow us to go to do the home visit with you away from home. And again, no one is forcing you here, but we do want to find out how you're doing and how do we help you. I hope this is clear. Please don't overthink it. We're just trying to find out how you're living and how we can help. Thanks for your support. Semper Fidelis.
Again, that's Lieutenant General Eric M. Smith of the United States Marine Corps. And fortunately, within the military, which is a very tight fraternity, it really is, and it doesn't get any tighter than it does with the Marine Corps, you have people looking out for you, regardless of who's in the White House. Now, Major John Perry, spokesperson for Marine Corps Installations Command, emphasized the comprehensive nature of the inspections, aimed primarily at ensuring compliance with health and safety standards, and immediate action was taken to look into pressing health and safety issues identified during the inspection. Now, to tackle the identified shortcomings, the Marine Corps intends to analyze the inspection results, and they are going to go through it, they promise, with a fine-toothed comb. And this analysis aims to allocate additional funding effectively toward the revitalization of barracks, prioritizing improvements that directly enhance the quality of life for Marines. I would imagine that this same program is going to be repeated for the other branches of the armed forces. Although, having been in the Air Force, I can tell you this, the Air Force always, I don't know, they always lived better than the other branches of the armed forces, and I could never figure out why, but we did. But that situation was greatly improved upon, oh gosh, years ago, and yet long after I got out of the Air Force. So anyhow, during the inspections, the barracks managers utilized detailed checklists covering several aspects of habitability, safety, cleanliness, that sort of thing. And these assessments provided insights into specific areas requiring attention, like kitchens, bathrooms, living spaces, alongside recommendations for follow-up actions. And in cases where severe issues like mold or safety hazards were uncovered, commanders were empowered to relocate affected Marines as outlined in a memorandum provided by Perry. Now, the inspection findings echoed earlier reports reflecting systemic challenges persisting over decades. Imagine that. One Marine station in Washington, D.C., speaking anonymously, underscored the longstanding nature of the problem, applauding recent attention from command leadership, but questioning why action took so long. And I think I can answer that. It's because politicians don't place a priority on it. Out of all the politicians in Washington, how many are military veterans? Not many. Not many at all, particularly on the left. Now, according to Major General Maxwell, commander of Marine Corps Installations Command, approximately 88,000 Marines currently reside in dormitories, highlighting the scale of the challenge. Now, Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps, Carlos Ruiz, acknowledged the gravity of the situation before the House Committee on Appropriations, basically affirming the commitment to invest in barracks' future. Now, the Government Accountability Office, boy, I remember those guys, GAO. They issued a report focusing on housing for junior enlisted personnel. Those are the guys who always get the most bare bones in housing, junior enlisted personnel. And it highlighted pervasive issues across multiple installations. Even barracks with high ratings by Department of Defense standards were deemed in need of a lot of improvement, with some labeled as uninhabitable by installation officials. That's pretty bad. Former barracks residents' testimonies and the GAO's site visits corroborated concerns regarding inadequate facilities, including, get this, lack of hot water, malfunctioning amenities, and unsanitary conditions. Should our service people be living like that? Of course not. Instances of neglect in addressing maintenance requests were also documented, undermining residents' quality of life. And I remember when I was in the Air Force, you had a problem in your dormitory, you could get it addressed, usually very quickly. We had a division called Civil Engineering, and they would come over and take care of the problems, be it electrical, plumbing, what have you. Now, social media posts further illustrated the dire conditions in certain barracks, prompting some action from authorities to address the issues. However, the underlying causes of deterioration of this nature remain unclear. But sometimes all it takes is just time and a little neglect, and that can destroy an entire structure. And training deficiencies among barracks managers, identified by the GAO, highlight the need for structural reforms within the Marine Corps housing management framework. The plan to replace military personnel with civilian professionals and other strategic initiatives signify a comprehensive approach. I mean, they're being very thorough about this, and they're making some considerations that in past years never would have even been considered. So, I don't know. I believe they're sincere about addressing the issues. Solving them, well, that's another thing, you know, because it takes money to do that, and you have to have it allocated by the people in Washington. Good luck. Well, here's something very interesting from Anthony Scott, writing in the Gateway Pundit, who says that while most Americans were dialed in on the solar eclipse, the FBI quietly, very, very quietly, released unclassified documents regarding Ashley Babbitt. You remember her, the Air Force veteran, shot to death by a Capitol Police officer. But his name is Michael Byrd, by the way, the officer, and he's still working. And that happened on January 6th. Well, on April 8th, the FBI released a highly redacted 69-page file on details of Ashley Babbitt's death, her military background, and testimonies on Babbitt's character. And on page 3 of the file, it was written, Babbitt is deceased, and therefore this case is not being nominated to TSDB. Now, TSDB stands for the Terrorist Screening Data. Okay? I realize that the terrorist screening data does not work out to TSDB, but it's an inside term. The TSDB contains biographic and biometric identifying information, you know, like the name, the date of birth, photographs, iris scans, and or fingerprints of known and suspected terrorists. So it sounds to everybody concerned here like the FBI is treating Ashley Babbitt as though she were a terrorist. Now, the fact that if the FBI even mentioned the TSDB goes to show that the FBI viewed Americans inside the Capitol on that day as terrorists rather than American citizens who were simply frustrated with the way the 2020 election was conducted. So it's the FBI against you and me. It's like that meme we saw with Donald Trump. Remember, it was in black and white. He's seated in a chair, leaning forward. He says, "They're not after me. They're after you. I'm in their way." Now, the file oddly made no mention of Capitol Police Officer Byrd, but instead generally stated Babbitt was shot by police. Oversight? No. They're trying to pull the rug over the dirt here. Now, our friends at the Gateway Pundit, they've been looking into this. And they were the first publication to correctly identify Michael Byrd as Ashley Babbitt's cold-blooded killer. And that's the term that the Gateway Pundit used, and I think it applies. So you go through the file, and later on you find the FBI provides a brief overview of Babbitt's personal information, such as her fingerprints, DMV records, and details regarding her military service. And several pages were redacted that contained anonymous tips made by unnamed individuals through the FBI's tip line. And one page of the file was an interview of an individual whose name was redacted. The individual described Babbitt as very outgoing and loving person who loved her family and country. In the same interview, the person stated Ashley would never go after someone physically. Now, the Gateway Pundit previously reported Judicial Watch file. Do you remember Judicial Watch? Tom Fitton, the guy with the big shoulders and arms. Very fit fellow, and he's an excellent lawyer. And he's the founder of Judicial Watch. And they filed a $30 million wrongful death lawsuit against the U.S. government for her death. And that thing is still pending. But Tom Fitton has an excellent track record when it comes to taking on the government and getting answers. Man, this is interesting. Not surprising, but interesting. A CIA officer and former FBI officials on an undercover video boasting about using the might of the federal government to jail anyone by setting them up. His name is Gavin Oblenis, a contracting officer for the CIA, and he told an undercover journalist with Sound Investigations, that's the name of the organization, that the FBI can put anyone in jail. Just set them up. He says, quoting him, "We call it a nudge." And then he added that the FBI can put problematic right-wing journalists like Tucker Carlson and Alex Jones in jail. Now, Oblenis said of InfoWars founder Alex Jones, who, you know, is kind of a half a bubble off from the rest of the world. You either love him or you hate him. But he said of Alex Jones, the FBI took his money away and chopped his legs off. And I saw the video. I would love to play the audio for you, but there's so much background noise you'd never understand a word. But it was really interesting watching Oblenis' facial expressions as he was telling this undercover journalist the stories. And he said at least 20 undercover FBI agents were at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th of 21. So the journalist says, "I thought you said there were FBI agents in the crowd at January 6th. And he replied, he says, "There are. There are always agents there when there's a big protest in D.C. Just in case it gets out of hand like that." I mean, I'm talking they maybe had 20. You needed 1,000 to get rid of that crowd. And then he also said the FBI uses embellished news and fake social media to really get people mad. In other words, they'll gin up a crowd. Say, well, he made it clear in the video that pro-lifers are among the targets the FBI goes after. And what they'll do is the FBI will plant people. They'll plant phony social media reports to gin up the crowd and make them angry and see if they can't coax them into breaking the law so they can round them up and take them in. So I'm not going to get real long-winded on this, but I just wanted to call this to your attention. There's a complete story on this in the Gateway Pundit, if you care to look it up. The video is there, runs about 7.5 minutes long. It's interesting stuff. And the first thing that shakes you to the core when you're watching the video is Oblenis's arrogance. The pride he takes in this. You know, and to think that we used to have respect for the FBI. Remember Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. starring on Sunday nights on the FBI? A Quinn Martin production. Oh, we loved that show. It was a good show. And they always got the man. They always got the do-bad. Well, your FBI today is an entirely different organization. About as corrupt as it can be. You know, let's be honest. The FBI has always had a certain amount of corruption. I mean, look at all the questions they were asking about J. Edgar Hoover back in the 70s. You know, all the allegations about his private hobbies. And, you know, so really, this shouldn't be too shocking. But I just think that, you know, being forewarned is being forearmed. Long time ago, when I was young, naive, and somewhat bulletproof, I used to believe that all these people wearing military uniforms, especially the top brass, the guys with all the what we used to call chicken poop on their on the bill of their cap, were there to protect us. They were there to protect the American people and the American dream, and to protect our Constitution. Because after all, they swear to do so when they take the oath. Upon entering the military, I did that when I went into the service back in August of 1968. But we have 19 retired generals, admirals, and former top civilian defense officials who've filed a brief with the Supreme Court opposing Donald Trump's plea for immunity from prosecution, claiming that granting this kind of a request would pose a significant threat to national security. So you mean to tell me that those boxes of documents in the garage next to Joe Biden's 67 Corvette were not a breach of security? See, you know, here again, it's the double standard. Well, just so that you know, the Supreme Court is set to deliberate on Trump's immunity argument on the 25th. The Supreme Court is going to deliberate on whether a president can be shielded from legal consequences for actions taken while in office. And the decision, which may not arrive until late June, according to analysts, has some significant repercussions for the timeline of special counsel Jack Smith's case against Trump, potentially delaying the trial's start until after this year's election. Well, I mean, is this manipulation or what? I don't know. You'll have to be the judge on that one. But President Trump's legal team requested that the Supreme Court put a hold on the immunity decision related to Jack Smith's January 6th case in Washington, D.C. Now, this came after a federal appeals court, influenced by appointees of Joe Biden, had denied Trump immunity. Now, the three-judge panel of the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, consisting of judges Florence Pan, Michelle Childs, both Biden appointees, and Karen Henderson, a George W. Bush appointee, emphasized the importance of allowing the prosecution to move forward, citing the public's interest and the structure of the government. Now, Trump's lawyers have argued that any former president is immune from federal prosecution for alleged offenses committed while holding office. And Trump's lawyers wrote, in 234 years of American history, no president ever faced criminal prosecution for his official acts. Until 19 days ago, no court had ever addressed whether immunity from such prosecution exists. To this day, no appellate court has addressed it. The question stands among the most complex, intricate, and momentous issues that this court will be called on to decide. Well, on Monday, a group of retired military officers, including former four-star generals and admirals, as well as past secretaries of the U.S. military branches, filed an amicus brief with the Supreme Court. And the group warns of the alleged threats to national security and democratic principles if former President Trump's claims of presidential immunity for official acts were to be accepted. Now, the 38-page brief, which includes signatures from officials who've served under both Democratic and Republican administrations, dating back to the era of former President Kennedy, cautions that Trump's legal theory could set a dangerous precedent. Well, of course, they're obligated to make that argument, right? Think about that. But among the signatories, this isn't all of them, but among the signatories, Ray Mabus, former Secretary of the Navy, retired Air Force General Michael Hayden, who also served as a CIA director. I know a lot about this guy. I do not like him. I don't trust him any farther than I could throw him and the entire CIA building. Retired Army Generals George Casey and Peter Chiarelli. Retired Air Force Generals John Jumper, Craig McKinley, and Charles Wald. Retired Marine Corps Generals Carlton Fulford, Charles Krulak, and Robert Magnus. Retired Navy Admirals Steve Abbott, Samuel Jones Locklear, John Nathman, Bill Owens, and Scott Swift. And retired Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen. And they're joined by former civilian defense officials, including Louis Caldera, Deborah Lee James, and Sean O'Keefe. Now, should the theory of absolute immunity prevail, the group argues, it'll risk jeopardizing America's standing as a guardian of democracy in the world and further feeding the spread of authoritarianism, thereby threatening the national security of the United States and democracies around the world. To which I say, bullcorn. That is pure bullcorn. What this is, you mark my words, my friend, what this is political posturing. To the Comedy Corner now with John Deming.
I'm a little nervous about being married. Because now, if I'm broke, it matters. Right? Like, if you're broke as a single guy, it's almost charming, you know? But now, if I bring home a bag of combos for dinner, she made a bad decision. That's what happened. And I've been broke, you guys. I've been there. Recently, I was so broke, a stranger offered me a free burrito at a train station, and I said yes! I didn't even ask what was in it. I'm allergic to some things. Like, granted, most burritos don't contain the antibiotic clindamycin, but I should have asked, so. I should have asked. Could have been anything in there. I don't know. Could have been horse meat. I don't know. But at a certain level of broke, you don't look a gift horse burrito in the mouth. That's reality. I'm so broke recently. You know you're broke when you make a purchase in dimes. You know? Have you ever tried to pay with dimes in 2019? Like, even if you pay with quarters, they're used to it. They're cool with it. You bust out a bag of dimes and they're like, no, we don't have any licorice rope. Nor is it 1946. Get out of my 7-Eleven, please. Yeah, dime will remind you you're broke. Right? You look at it like, what president's on this one again? Oh, right, the one during the Great Depression. That's appropriate. That makes sense. That's who's on that. Franklin Delano Roosevelt is on the dime. A dime isn't even money. It's just like a reminder that polio used to exist. I love the people groaning like, hey, I liked polio. You shouldn't make fun of it. But that's the thing. A $100 bill, you get Ben Franklin. Right? You pay with $100, you get to think of the joy of scientific discovery and the Enlightenment. Pay with a Roosevelt dime, you think of a time in history where Mussolini was the not-so-bad one. And it's not just the front of dimes that's sad, either. Right? Even the back, because if you look at the back of other coins, you get to see cool stuff. You get to see the Lincoln Monument. You get to see a bald eagle. Half dollar has a bald eagle with arrows. I feel like they wanted to give him a gun, but they were like, ah, Kennedy is on the other side of this. Oh. You know what's on the back of a dime? A torch and some leaves. Looks like the emoji for deforestation.
That's it. Make it a terrific Thursday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.